I'm Alex.
And I'm Rob.
I'm from Novi Sad, Serbia.
And I'm from New York City.
I'm a Scorpio.
I'm a Taurus.
I'm a man.
And I'm a woman.
We are both very different.
And yet, we have a lot to talk about.
Hiya, thanks for tuning in. Today I have a lot to talk about, and Rob has a lot of questions about cars and Formula One. She's, let's say, pretty clueless when it comes to this topic. That won't stop her from talking anyway. Enjoy!
What got you into cars in the first place?
When I think about it, I don't really know, because it kind of was always like a part of me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was a kid. Really, mm-hmm. like 4 or 5 years old, I would know like make and model of cars.
Oh my god, really? At that age?
Yeah, and I didn't know like the letters or how to write. But I would know like...
Naturally.
Yeah, but I was, you know, but some kids, you know, they were like 5, 6, I guess, they like learn letters and stuff. So it was kind of a...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like the same, let's say that it's the same gene, my brother has the same gene, let's say, in terms of like knowing about cars and being
interested in cars.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so I can't really like pick one thing, like what got me into cars. Like it's not mm-hmm. like that it's not my dad, but he's definitely not into cars like that. He's like, yeah, definitely not too into the details and in general in that like magnitude as I am, let's say. So
that's so interesting. So is there anybody besides your brother that's interested in like cars in your immediate family? Like, is your mom into it, or do you have like a cousin?
No.
Wow, so you, that was just like as a kid you just kind of latched onto it?
Yeah.
And I guess your brother is older than you, so maybe... I had the same thing with my brother with musicals.
Mm-hmm.
I was not into musicals, and then my brother was listening to a musical in middle school, and he was a few years older than me, so then I started listening to that. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah, it could be that thing, but yeah, I don't know like what exactly happened there, but there you go. So, were you interested in cars or...
Oh my god, I don't... Alex, I know nothing about cars.
I know, but maybe like when you were a kid, so when you... later, when you reached the age of reason, then you kind of forget about it.
Well, my grandfather was really into cars. And it's so funny that we're doing this episode because he had recorded one of his road trips in a journal. Where he went across from New York State to California. And so often in these journals, he was talking about like cars that he was seeing or like the car that they were driving. They were in a Jeep, an open Jeep. So, you know, he was constantly commenting on that. And they went and saw a car fair and all that stuff. And basically opposite of you, I should be into cars.
Yes.
And yet I really know nothing.
Yeah, sometimes it happens when you have like... siblings or like people around you who are like more than me, let's say, if not just my brother, but like, you know, other people too.
So for you, what about cars is interesting? Is it the sport of cars, like sports cars and all that stuff, or is it the actual like you said, like make and models of cars? Again, I know nothing about cars.
Yeah.
So like what facet of the car industry is most interesting for you?
Well, I'm definitely more interested in just like cars than racing cars. I mean, I love watching like racing, but realistically, like let's say quote normal cars are like usable. You can buy them, or you know, at least some of them. So I personally like driving. The sheer like experience or the feeling of actual like driving, that's the most important thing.
And I can imagine that actually knowing about the car makes riding specific cars that much more enjoyable. Because I can agree, I really like riding cars, but Do you think that factors into your like joyriding? Yeah. That's
well, that's like a kind of, that's not a big thing in Serbia, like a joyriding. Usually people.
I realized it as I said it, but you know, context. I meant like, you know, the enjoyable riding, but
yeah. I like driving, so I would sometimes just go on a drive with our that's what I was doing when I was so at one point I used to own like two cars.
Mm-hmm.
So one was like older classic car, and the other car was like every day, like, you know, daily, as you would say. So sometimes I would just like it was like a kind of a weekend car, so I was just driving it for like a sake of driving, because it was a kind of interesting, quirky, you know, it's a like a kind of experience. Mm-hmm. I most of the time when I go driving, for me it's a kind of experience, even though it's like times when you go like driving to work, or you know, there are some like dull when you're stuck in traffic and it's not like really anything interesting, but like most drives that I do do enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy driving with you. You are a very good driver, I can attest.
Thank you. Yeah, so you could like experience maybe that I was like enjoying certain like curve or something, like, yeah.
Well, I will say the downhill experience.
Oh.
With you driving was, let me say, authentically Serbian.
I don't know what the hell that means, but okay.
Well, you guys just drive a lot. Like for us, it would be, let me stop and let you go. Yeah. While for you guys, it would be, let me hurry up so that you can go. So, you know, you're going to speed faster so that the person who's trying to merge can merge in behind you. Versus in the US, it would be like, let me stop so that you can merge in front. And it really does work like that. I think because it's like culturally everyone does that, it, you know, for me, it like feels a little crazy. But when you actually experience it, it doesn't, it's not as hectic, you know, as it may seem, because everyone's in the same mindset.
I would say, like, as you saw, it doesn't really work every time. Sometimes people like hesitate and they just fail. Hesitates, he or she will start to go, like, and then like hesitate and then stop, and then eventually will go and will be too late and you have to brake and he's in front of you and driving 20, 30, whatever. Nothing, you know, so sometimes it fails.
And I just have to say this in case my parents are listening, because I did have a boyfriend in high school who used to speed like crazy, like was a really bad driver, like speed demon, bad driver. Alex is one of the best drivers I've ever ridden with, and I've told him, he's heard me say it. So going back to driving and finding joy in that, do you think that knowing the details of the car are essential to enjoy the drive?
Yeah, I think so. But now when you like ask, I mean, you don't know nothing about the cars and you enjoy driving. So kind of could be going both ways, I think. What do you think?
I mean, I think if you know what you're doing and you know the car, like, you know how to drive the car that you're driving, then it becomes relaxing. You know, just like riding a bike, you know. Uh-huh.
You mean like, yeah, it's like if you're more technical, then yeah, you know, like, you know how it works. Yeah, it can be like, yeah, probably it's like a different level, I guess. But joy part doesn't have to be necessarily bad. I mean, you say that, I mean, you don't know nothing about the cars, but you'll enjoy driving at least. You know how to drive.
Yeah,
that's you know, true. So, especially in today's society, you don't have to know pretty much anything, and you can do some things, especially driving. I mean, I know people who have a driver's license, they don't know how to change a tire. So do you know how to change a tire?
No, but I also had my license for like 4 years before I learned how to put gas in the tank. So I'm really like,
wrong
mean,
question.
But a big thing in the US is that we all know how to drive automatic, while in Europe, everyone can drive standard
stick.
Stick.
You would call it
stick. Yeah. Yes.
For some reason, manual.
Manual. Okay. I really don't know anything. So not only can I, so for me, if I were, you know, in Europe and I was faced with driving a car, I wouldn't be able to drive it. I wouldn't be able to put any gas in it and I wouldn't know how to change the tires. But at that point, I wouldn't even know how to drive it. So yeah. I wouldn't have to change the tires.
Makes sense.
This actually just reminds me of when I was watching F1 with you, how fast they change the tires. And I wanted to mention, F1 because you're, you know, while also being interested in cars in general, you're also really into racing and the sports racing and everything. And I think one of the biggest questions for people in the US that are probably listening are in relation to what makes all of these races different. Like what, like we know NASCAR and I'm sure there's a few people out there that know Formula One from the US, could you kind of explain what the differences are?
So the differences between NASCAR and F1 or Formula One, basic difference is that one series is like single seaters, which is F1, and the other series, NASCAR, is car racing series in terms of like that they're actually quotes production cars, because like the cars that you find in a NASCAR are like production car, that's the basic difference. A single seater is basically a car with a single seat, right? But it's like not a production car that you can buy, whereas NASCAR and every other like a touring car championship in Europe, you can buy that car. They are modified, of course, but yeah, and it depends of the regulations. So like VRC, World Rally Championship, so they're also racing production cars, and there is a rule in the regulation. Let's say, I don't know, like specifically now they changed some things, I guess, but like let's say 40% of the car has to be from the production car, or like 30%, I don't know the amount, and you have to produce certain amount of cars of that car to actually put it into racing. So that's the same with the NASCAR, but also in USA you have a single seater IndyCar, it's called. That's like basically like a Formula One. It's different, but it's a single seater. So, and that's also big. So I would say bigger than NASCAR. I don't know. Maybe it's not bigger, but it is big.
So really, there are just so many different racing leagues, it feels like, that are, you know, the requirements for what the car looks like, as you said, like the single-seater versus like a actual like car that you would see driving down the street. Because for anyone that doesn't know F1, those cars are not the type of cars that you would see like going down the street. They're almost like a like fancier version of like a go-kart.
Yes. Yeah.
That can go like hundreds of miles per hour. Yeah.
And nothing is on that car that doesn't serve a purpose. Like let's say on a NASCAR or every like other touring car, it will be like a windshield, blah, blah, blah. Whereas this is not obviously. So yeah. And there is the regulations are also very important for every series. Because otherwise, engineers will go berserk with the amount of things that they can do. So, to push the limit of like, for example, in F1 for the next year, finally they put a budget cap to the actual teams in how much millions they can spend. Because when you have like a factory team and a small private team, you cannot really compare the amount of money they put into teams. So this will make things more like a playing field. Should be, at least.
So when it comes to, I guess we'll focus on F1 because that's kind of what you're more into, because NASCAR is it's more of like a test of the like speed of the car versus like the agility, because you're just going in a circle. But for something like F1, since that's what you're interested in, yeah. Who are like the I guess you said teams, like what are the big teams or like because they're all sponsored, right? That's how it works. Man, I sound like an idiot.
So what is the actual question? So who are the biggest teams in F1, right?
Yeah. So yeah, who are the biggest teams right now in F1?
So the biggest teams in F1, you have like few, but for the time being, it's Mercedes, like the factory team of the actual Mercedes-Benz brand. Ferrari, but they're in a kind of a slump now in terms of like pace, but they're big.
Mm-hmm.
Basically second team is Red Bull for this year, and yeah, for this year, last year they were like second or third. Ferrari was mm-hmm. was mostly second. So that's like a big three teams now. And actually, it's a kind of a sad thing in F1 now. So what used to happen, so in F1, you would have few factory teams. Usually they will come and go, you know, like, I don't know, like Alfa Romeo used to be, like now it's also Alfa Romeo, but it's a different story than it used to be. Honda will come and go. Ferrari, for example, it's always there. And then you have like a small family teams,
mm-hmm.
family-owned teams, and like 2 months ago, last family-owned team was sold to investment firm, and last week was the last time that a member of that family was on a pit wall. So it was end of the year for F1. So like in the world, everything is going into like corporate thing.
Mm. So that's how you get something like Red Bull.
Yes.
Having a
yes.
car, an F1 team, yes. versus like Ferrari, which Ferrari to me is like, oh, that's the industry of cars. All right. That makes sense. But Red Bull, it's kind of like energy drink.
Yes.
So that's what, so they, did they buy up a old like family owned team?
Yes. Yes, they did. But that's the,
okay.
In 2005, they bought, what was the, I think Jaguar, I think. But they bought two teams actually, and one also a family-owned team, Italian team. They bought and rebranded into Toro Rosso. Now it's Alfa Tauri, which is like Red Bull's clothing brand. So that's the basically they started that in 2005. That's the basically the, let's say, a model that that you can run a business and not being like actually producer of cars and being into F1. So you have basically you need a good people, good engineers, and you can build everything mm-hmm. in house, but you don't build an engine, you buy it from whoever. It's that's the most expensive part. I mean, everything is expensive, but you don't build the engine. So
weird.
Yeah,
that's like the most important part though, and you don't even build it, you buy it from somebody else.
It was almost always like that. You don't have a money to invest to build an engine. I mean, even
well, I don't have
the
money.
Big manufacturers not, yeah, so you don't have like money to invest in even the big firms are not now doing it, like buying sort of speak like off the shelf from somebody else. Yeah, the small companies are doing that, like Lotus, the British brand of the like a small sports cars. Mm-hmm. They're buying Toyota's engines. Aston Martin is using Mercedes engines for the new car. So this is the same. So you would build like the actual like body and the car, which is not easy. And then you will buy an engine. Like for the IndyCar, you have two manufacturers of bodies even. Mm-hmm. So let's say in theory you and I, we can own a team and buy like Lola is producer of IndyCar bodies, or you can ask them to engineer a body for like F1, let's say, and then you can buy that and you buy engine from something else, and then you have a team.
Mm.
You know.
This kind of reminds me of horse racing, in that, you know, if the car was the horse, like, you know, like with a horse, you can control what it eats and its breeding. But it, at the end of the day, the horse is itself and it's going to race however it races. Same with the car. It's like you're kind of like you're expediting the way that it's built by not building it yourself. So then it really just becomes you profiting off of. Well, I guess, I mean, they also have, like, engineers and, you know, the pit crew and the driver,
Yeah. And how you set up the car is also important. That's why, like, let's say in F1, Red Bull, it's like the they won four times in a row from 2010 to 2013. That's the, I think, the first time that like, not big manufacturer, won in like years. Ferrari was winning before that. McLaren is like a F1 team, yes, but they're like a big brand and they're making cars. So this is like a basically it's also big corporate firm, Red Bull. They build a great team. They have money to invest. They also pick up good people to design cars. They have the, for example, the designer is the most successful designer in of like actual cars in the history of F1. Yeah, one of the reasons why they're so successful. So,
for this season, what's the current status of everything with Formula One? Like, I guess in general, how's the race going?
Well, basically, they started for this year. They started late. Usually it's like late March or like middle of March they will start the season. This year, obviously, because of the pandemic, they start in June. And for the season, you would have like 20, 21 races, something like that. 22 maybe was the plan for this year. Yeah, I think 22. But because of the corona and everything, they still managed to book 17, which is like I would suggest is a miracle to organize everything. So now we are at like I think 8 race out of 17. So and we have spectators on the last race in Mugello in Italy. By the way, Ferrari owned track, amazing track. They had like 3,000 spectators, so that's the first time this year with the spectators. So that's the current state.
So how does it work? Is it like a tournament style? So whoever wins the most races kind of wins the overall.
It's a point system. So you have like constructors championship, which means that team is gathering points, and F1 drivers, they're gathering points for themselves. So you have like two drivers per team, but regardless first 10 people in the classification would get points. It's 25, 18, I think 16, 14, and so on. So 1 point is for the 10th place. And so if you have two drivers in first 10, you would have like, let's say, 1 point and 4 points. So that's 5 points for a certain team and four for one guy and one, obviously, for the other. That's how it goes. It has like a, let's say, two championships. Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned this, I'm very interested. So, for example, in football in the U.S., in American football, you have, you know, so many teams in the league, and even the ones that always end up like with the most losses are kind of important to the league because that's what allows the other ones to win, if that makes sense. So in the racing world, especially in Formula One, is it important to kind of have those maybe cheaper or family owned or low level racers in the running?
Yeah.
Or does it kind of like get varied throughout the year? So like maybe someone's always coming in 10th for a few races and then they win a few. Like, what's the ratio of wins to losses?
Basically, you have in a matter of few races, you would know where every team stands. Like I said, they introduced for the next year a budget cap. So hopefully that will not be so relevant or seeable. So what happens during the year, some teams with more money, they will progress, and they will, maybe if they're like at the start of the season, they're like on a back foot because they maybe did something wrong in the wind tunnel or whatever, that car doesn't work good, and they will like gather information, blah blah blah, and in a few races they will introduce updates, so they can progress over the year, and like from the not winning car in the end, in the beginning of the year, by the end of the year, if, like I said, if they have like money,
mm-hmm.
And knowledge, it happened like with the Red Bull, they're usually the best progressing team over the year. Like I said, with the smaller teams, doesn't really happen. They invest something, but usually at the end of the season, like last third of the season, they're already focusing on the next season, especially if they're like going to drop the whole concept of this year's car. So, and there's, yeah, they, you always have like those smaller teams that newbies are coming into. But like I said, that's also now becoming more corporate, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would have smaller teams that are dependent of bigger teams, or they're owned partially by the bigger teams, so that bigger team can bring like new drivers to drive for those like smaller teams and to like learn, which is good, but also it's bad. Then you don't have like Alfa Romeo in so they bought like 2 years ago, they bought like family-owned team from Switzerland called Sauber, and they rebranded into Alfa Romeo, and it has a Ferrari engine. I mean, it's just a lie, you know, just like a brand, it's just like marketing. And they're putting, so Ferrari has a Ferrari driving academy, and they're putting one of the drivers, if it's for that driving academy, maybe the guy who will drive for Ferrari next, you know. And the guy who drives for Ferrari now, 2 years ago, he drove for Alfa Romeo. So, you know, they're putting, like, they're going through the ranks, let's say. But just saying, it's like...
So it's almost like a cover team for the big team.
Yeah. That's why also Red Bull have that other team, Alfa Tauri. They're putting... because Red Bull has also driver academy. So... From that program, the new kids are coming into the sport and not necessarily being in a big point scoring team like Red Bull to like, you know, just go be 1-2 seasons, because it's not for everybody and you need experience to do it. Some people cannot do it. Like, for instance, Sebastian Bourdais, he's like a 4-5 time. At the time, he was like 2 or 3 times IndyCar champion. So that's in USA. He came in.
Yeah. I think I've heard of him before, actually.
See? So he came into F1 like, I don't know, like 10 years ago, maybe even more. Like, let's say 10 years ago. And he was not old, nothing. And he came like, I think he won like back-to-back 2 championships. And he's French. Like, I don't know what was the connection. Some people just like go from Europe into IndyCar and just drive there like great. So he came to F1, went nowhere. And went back to Indy. He's still driving in Indy. And I think he won like 2 more championships, something like crazy like that. So for some people, doesn't work.
So how can someone like me, who knows nothing about cars, understand such a complex sport like Formula One? I mean, it's not even about the drivers. It's about like the whole team, which is so complex. Like how would someone like me even... you know, begin to understand and then enjoy this type of sport as a spectator?
Yeah, well, for somebody like you to understand it, I guess if you like actually like watching F1, if it is not boring for you, for some people, they just go into a circle, or you know,
well, I mean, in Formula One they're not, they're, you know, you've said every track is unique, and sometimes they're like really beautiful. Yes,
but people would say that here too, because they didn't see like ovals that you have in USA for like a NASCAR or whatever. I mean, some people did see, but they will still say like they're just going into circles. You know, then you can argue that for every sport, like football, they're just like
going back and forth.
Yeah, 22 guys with one ball, and 2 guys are just by the sides, and like the rest 20 guys are like running up for the ball, and it's boring. You can argue for every sport like that. So I guess if you like watching like driving and stuff, then you can, I would suggest like going slow. Yeah, and one thing as you can like appreciate, some tracks are really beautiful, and you have a good chance of like in a few days it will be 24 hours of Le Mans, which is not like Formula One, but it's a race that lasts for, as his name would suggest, for 24 hours. So you have a lot of time to look at the racing and think about tactics and what have you. So I guess start slow. I don't know. Hi guys, I just wanted to take a moment and talk about my business. As you may know, I'm into cars, but I also like designing vintage car shirts. My personal Instagram page, you can find link to our page, we have a lot to talk about, but also I have other Instagram page, that's @vintage_car_shirts. In the description of that page, you can find a link to the shop where you can buy my t-shirts. So that's @vintage_car_shirts. Thank you. So you really don't know nothing about cars?
I mean, I really don't know anything about cars, to be honest. The only thing I can think of is so there's this show, because I really like watching comedy shows and stuff. And Seinfeld, I'm sure you know the show Seinfeld.
Yes. He's a car guy, by the way.
Yes. So he has this show called Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And I started watching it a few years ago. And at the beginning of every episode, he talks about a vintage car that describes the person that's on the show for the day. And then they film, either they'll film in a coffee shop for a little bit, and then they'll usually film themselves driving around in that vintage car. And so I don't really know anything about cars. Like, I don't know anything about makes and models. Like, if I see it on the street, I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate, like, the artistry, especially of, like, vintage cars. Like, the styles, the bodies that you don't necessarily see anymore.
Yes.
Yeah. That, I think, is really cool. I'll send, like, a picture to you of a car that I see. And you'll be like, that's not a very impressive car. And I'll be like, but it's pretty.
Yeah. That's true. Ever seen like a car from like 30s?
I mean, I used to go. So at the New York State Museum in Albany, where I'm from, they have like a bunch of cars, or maybe it's fire engines. I don't really remember. And like I've sat in a really old car, but I don't know what year it's from. It might be from that early. My Uncle Bob, his nephew, restored this old car. I really wish I knew anything about it, but I think it was like at least 40s or 50s.
I mean, like 20s, 30s in Europe, especially, they're like cars are like, even in USA, but because of the depression maybe, but later in USA, like 50s were crazy in terms of like design, the space age, blah, blah, blah. But like 20s and 30s, like it was really, they're like art deco-ish and really like a pieces of art.
Well, yeah, because it was like the beginning.
Well, yeah, at like 20s cars were there to stay, so you know, whereas like in the beginning of 20th century they were like you know, they're like chariots with engines.
Yeah Well, isn't the punch buggy Volkswagen? So it's the the Nazi car.
Yes.
That I know
well.
And isn't that interesting that that style has survived so long? Much like white supremacy.
but there are some cars that, like, you don't have to keep this, but there are some cars that are striking even today. Like, probably some cars that you don't know about, but if you were seeing them in person, you would say, like, whoa. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to... Like, the other day I saw a car, it was like... I'm such an idiot. It was like yellow and it was like long. So it looked like it was from like, I don't know, 70s? 70s when the cars were long?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I almost took a picture of it and sent it to you.
I didn't know why.
But then I was like, it might be stupid. It might be, because sometimes I'll send things to you and we'll be like, that's a very unimpressive car. Yes. But it'll be yellow. So I'm like, it must be really interesting. Yeah. It's like, no, it's just a yellow Honda.
I mean, if anything, I would like it because it's Honda most of the time. But that's yeah, true. The first time you...
I mean, and that's the only reason why I know what Honda is because you like it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And you're mixing Honda with Hyundai because the emblem is the same and it's not the same, but whatever.
Also, Honda and Hyundai, I have no idea what the difference is.
Yeah, okay. Also,
you're so disappointed in me.
The first time, also, I'm very disappointed. The first time you send me a picture of a car, it's a Europe car, see? And it's a Volkswagen. It's a Nazi car. I hate Volkswagens. And that car, basically, I can see every day. And I hate Volkswagens because everybody here loves Volkswagens. And I was like, USA, she's going to send me something crazy because they have, like, a great car culture. And then it's a Volkswagen. Oh, geez. Okay.
Honestly, I don't really see, I mean, what do I know? I was gonna say, I don't really see Volkswagens that much around here, but who knows? Someone's gonna definitely like respond to this podcast and be like, what are you talking about? They're all over. So
yes, yeah, but as far as I know, in the recent times, they don't have as much as good reputation in USA. I think like reliability issues. And also, like, the Dieselgate didn't help the thing that they admitted for cheating at the fumes test, basically, of they have a cheat system for amount of particles the car is producing, the diesel Uh-oh. Ones. So, yeah, that didn't help. Whereas, like, all, like, hippie Volkswagen buses and Beetles, obviously, in the 60s, they're very popular.
Well, I mean, I'm just, all I'm saying is I'm trying to learn, and this podcast gave me a good opportunity to learn a little bit more about it.
This podcast or me or, yeah, both, I don't know.
Thanks for listening. We have new episodes coming out every Monday. Don't miss out. We have a lot to talk about.